And this is the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. My guest in this portion of the program, naturalist, adventurer, and writer Redmond O'Hanlon. He has traveled into jungle, rainforest, swamp, Congo, the Amazon, and Borneo. His latest adventure took him to a very different place. He climbed aboard a deep-sea fishing boat, the Norlantian, and headed with its small but able crew out into the North Atlantic in January. A man with so many hair-raising adventures under his belt was wondering what he had gotten himself into. O'Hanlon's latest book is Trawler, A Journey Through the North Atlantic. If you pick it up, you'll soon be along for one wild ride, albeit from your easy chair. Redmond O'Hanlon, thank you so much for joining me today.
That's fun.
After getting the call from your friend Luke, saying, come ahead, we'll be off in a couple of days on the boat, you keep drawing the curtains back and forth, and there you are at home with your lovely wife and your lovely two kids, and you're thinking one should never have to leave what you call the warm lit female cave.
Yes.
What was the reluctance you felt at the outset of this adventure new to you?
Yes, it was. Maybe it's just getting old, but that links straight to a very odd discovery. These men, you see, they're immensely tough to look at, of course, but all in their 20s, late teens, 20s, only the skipper was 32. And if I'd been writing a novel about this, I would have made a big mistake. I would have thought there'd be lots of alcohol on board and drugs and sort of pornography and lots of sexist talk. Not a bit of it. You hear more sexist talk in the around the water cooler at the Times Literary Supplement in London, where I work for one day a month, you know. There was this constant yearning, and it became clear that why they really wanted me on board was, well, even the first mate, Big Brian, wanted to know how you stayed married to one woman for 35 years.
Yeah.
And young Robbie, we'll explain about sleep deprivation in a moment, but everybody unravels, rather. And he said that the great secret of life, it seemed to him, was exactly that. I mean, what he meant was the female cave somewhere that was safe and a comfort for a man. That's what they all yearned for. He said to me, it doesn't matter what she looks like, as long as she's there for you. There's one woman waiting on the quay when you return home. And as long as she's nae brack in the bed with the Stromness gravedigger when you're at sea. But the chaotic, violent lives they lead makes it very difficult. And even the first mate, this wonderful big Viking guy you'd like to, well, just look at him, big thighs and massive shoulders and very strong and silent. And that's the other thing about these people, that they're ashore. I'd only met trawlermen up in the far north ashore before, and they're really so silent that word will get round if they string three sentences together, one after the other, and especially if anything, any content of those three sentences relates to their feelings, and especially if the sentences are addressed to their wives, word will get round, they'll be thought to be homosexual and they'll not be allowed in the local bar. But at sea, because we only had an hour's sleep sometimes in 36 hours, you never get more than one hour's sleep, so you never have time to complete a full sleep cycle of 90 minutes. Everybody talks. I think the answer is that the brain organizes itself or tries to by talking rather than by dreaming, because you can't dream.
Interesting.
And these tremendous, confessions, longings. I mean, even Big Brian, see, he said to me, a friend of his, who's near friend no longer, he taught me the filthiest word in the English language. It's a dirty, dirty word, Redmond. It's uxorious. And I looked it up in the library, the bloody library, in a book from bloody Oxford, where you come from. And it says it's a man who loves his wife too much. And he said to me, he said, that's you, Brian. And do you think it's true? You see, I go home, and I didn't drink. I go home, and I can't help it. I'm crying. I'm weeping. I'm crying. The tears are running down my face, and I say to her, I love you, I love you, I love you, I adore you. I keep going on these trips by playing back in my mind. I play every moment of our life together. And she says to me, she says, Brian, you're big softy.
go to sleep for a day and a night and a night and a day, and then I'll wake you up, and then we'll have sex, and then we'll go shopping. And he was terribly worried that she was going to leave him because he got home and he cried. I mean, the others, what you really want to do, you don't seem to have a past, you can't imagine a future, you're psychotic, I suppose, and you really just want to go and have a drink. And that's what these young men do. They go to a bar called the Flatty, where I went to. And you have your first drink there, and then the minivan comes and takes you into Kirkwall, the capital. You know, it's still a tiny town. But there's a bar, has a bit more room. You can shove a pool table to one side, and that's where you go for scrapping. And none of these guys, apart from really fast little fighter Robbie who looked after me, they didn't have their own front teeth. Not just that, they've got a dental plate in and a spare one in the oleskin pocket. And I think that's how they sort of try to restore themselves to themselves. But tremendous fights.
You know, you mentioned the shortage of sleep. There's no money, though, while you're sleeping. There's no money made while you're sleeping. So 3 hours sleep in 36 or 40. But how long can that be sustained? How long do they go?
Well, it's a cooperative. So they all vote every month or so. They vote on who's not working hard enough, fast enough, who's losing it. So, as I said, nobody there over 30, apart from the skipper. And the rest of your workmates refuse to have you along anymore because you share the takings and the gutting and so on. And you just hope that you've made enough money by then to open up a groceries, which they all wanted to do, or a butcher's, anything that has nothing whatever to do with fish.
You've long been interested in the creatures found in wild places. What can you tell us about something you saw at sea on this trip that you'd like to tell us about?
Oh, well, yes. That was a great pleasure for me, despite only having an hour of sleep. You know, sometimes one in 36. It was still exciting to hear the roar of the fish from the cod end in the big steel hopper. And then up on the belt come these extraordinary fish. I mean, the main commercial catch, the green-winged halibut and the redfish, are interesting enough. But then, there was a massive deep sea octopus. See, this is new fishery. That's what really interested me. The nets go down for a mile, sometimes a mile and a half. So you never know what's coming up. I don't know, if you gave God every mad drug there is, he still wouldn't come up with the designs of some of these really extraordinary fish. It's just so exciting. The rabbit fish, for instance, that fossils clock in at 3 million years ago. It's a living link, as far as there is one, between the cartilaginous fishes, the rays and the sharks, and the bony fishes, the teleosts. And it's the most extraordinary looking thing. It looks a mess with a big marlin spike sticking up from its dorsal side, and these funny little flappy wings and a rabbit mouth. You think, well, why bother? Why did evolution move on from the sharks and the rays, which are obviously so perfectly adapted? But the real excitement for me, I think, is the most disgusting fish in the sea. It's actually a hagfish, but I had no sleep, so you have to forgive me. But looks a bit like a frankfurter. But when I first saw it crawling across the gutting table, the only thing that's alive when it's come up from that depth, I really did think some poor drowned sailor had lost his penis and this thing had got loose and had no sense of responsibility anymore at all. But it's really fascinating because it's a jawless fish, and its fossils we can date to around 510 million years ago. Now, these vast numbers mean nothing until you put them in context. And the first plants didn't get ashore. The land was barren until about 375 million years ago. So you can see what an extraordinary long-lived, well, it is a living fossil, but they're very common too. And I'm afraid that the trawlermen hate them because if you drowned, you've got to be dead. But so it's a taste of some fish, but But I'm afraid it always enters via the anus and makes its way up the digestive tract, and it's after your liver, and they swarm these things. It's a very efficient scavenger, and you'd think to yourself, well, looking at it, you know, it just does look like a frankfurter, and any passing shark would just have it for breakfast. But it's got 150. Little pustules they look like. I've got this specimen right in front of me here in a jar. I've taken it with me on tour. I'm very fond of it. And in these little pustule-like, they're actually glands. Some of them are full of thread cells that thread and some of a substance which, when the fish pushes it out into the sea, it hydrates faster than any other substance known. And this thing can produce 10 times its own volume of slime almost instantly. So it senses, got a very good sensory system, senses the shark, whatever the predator is, near it, and whop, out goes this great packet of slime, 10 times its own volume it can produce, and the slime gets in the mouth and the ears and the gills of the eyes of the shark. And the harder the shark shakes its head to get rid of this disgusting stuff, the tighter the substance sets, and this little frankfurter of a fish can strangle a shark right there and then.
Most unpleasant
thing
to contemplate.
That's the wonderful thing about it, that really, to begin with, I thought I'd be bored, because although I knew it intellectually, I didn't know emotionally. I mean, the vast stretch of time in the oceans makes life in a rainforest, which is, I thought was the absolute perfection of complexity and the most interesting place on Earth. Well, I rather changed my mind. I mean, Luke, the marine scientist with me, said, look, what are you talking about in your rainforest, 200 feet high? Now, look, if you take a section from the surface down to 200 feet anywhere in all the oceans of the world, you'll find there's up to 10 times more plant mass, more biomass, than in a rainforest, in your jungle. So that was a wonderful thought, too.
Yeah. We're going to have to wrap up fairly soon. What I'm going to do here is preempt the newscast, and let me remind folks that you're listening to WILL Urbana, and we're talking this afternoon with Redmond O'Hanlon, his latest book, Trawler, A Journey Through the North Atlantic. Back from an adventure like this, how do you put yourself together? Are you like Brian? When you come back from an adventure like this, how do you put yourself back together?
Well, I'm not sure that I have this time. Really not. And just trivial things to begin with, like in the little B&B in Thurso in the port, I have to wait until the corridor outside my room was swinging down at 45 degrees to get to the bathroom, and then I had to wait at the bathroom until it went the other ship rolled the other way, as it were, so I could get back to my bed. It took me 10 days to get home from the north of Scotland back to Oxford, which some people can do in a day and a half. I think all systems went. I think you shouldn't really go and join a crew like that when you're 55 and more. But then the more serious thing is, I like the trawler man. I think it really does bad things to you. No sleep for 2 weeks, just the odd hour here and there. Your horrible feeling, your subconscious is, as it were, flopped right out in front of you on the gutting table or in the galley, and you can't stop talking. And then once ashore, and these awful rages, I'd be sort of suddenly overwhelmed with anger about nothing, nothing sane that I could think of. So I really think maybe straight after this show with you, I think I'd better go and see a psychiatrist. I mean, I'm only half joking.
How quickly do you turn to writing what you've just been through?
Well, I write at night, and everything came back incredibly vividly. But in a way, the minute you compress dialogue, a travel book becomes a fiction in from some points of view. But the events, you must never, ever move an event around. That seems to me essential. You must tell the absolute truth about the external world. But you have to compress dialogue, put people's conversations together, and your final defense is that they would have said exactly that if they'd thought of it at the time.
Hmm. Why at night? Why do you write at night?
Just vivid. The world's closed in. Maybe the deep answer to your question is that if you're a male, part of you is thinking you ought to be out there in a hunting group, you know, just like a men on a trawler at sea, about the nearest you can get to hunter-gatherers now, unless they're pygmies or Yanomami in the jungles I've been to. But I think it's all right for women, as you say, in the female cave. They don't mind being stuck at home. But some part of a man, I think, is always thinking, I ought to be out there chasing mammoths over a cliff. But at night, you can't. So I can write at night. I think it's something as deep as that. It's
You can draw those.
So it's a male problem.
Yes, you can draw those velvet curtains, and you're tucked
draw the
in.
Velvet curtains.
You're tucked
tight
in.
And it's quiet, and you can't go out.
Thoughts on another adventure? Anything in the works?
Yeah, the Indonesian part of New Guinea, just to see the last big jungle I've never been to. But I've got to get young and fit again, I think. I'd really like to come to Illinois.
Well, come anytime.
Okay.
We'd love to have you. You and your specimen of the hagfish.
Yeah, it's such a pity I can't hand it to you. So it's down the phone. It normally lives in my boxer shorts. It seems an appropriate place for it.
I'm sorry.
Customs didn't like it much. It's very difficult to take it with me anywhere.
I bet customs, and also boarding a plane, I guess you might have some few odd looks from the...
I'm forever being pulled aside.
Yeah.
Secondary inspection. I have to explain what it does, and then everybody wants me to take it off on the plane, get out of the place.
There, we've got to wrap it up, I'm sorry to
say. Okay.
Redmond, thank you so much.
Well, what fun it's been. Bye then.
Take care. Redmond O'Hanlon has been my guest in this portion of the broadcast today. His latest book is Trawler, A Journey Through the North Atlantic. The book is published by Knopf.